Oh, and good morning. Today is Monday, the 22nd of June, and this is our morning Bible study. Today, we are going to be looking at 2 Samuel chapter 6. 2 Samuel chapter 6. Now, we've already seen how David has been made king over Israel and Judah. He is finally done with his wilderness wanderings, and he, especially through his commander-in-chief Joab, has conquered the city of Jerusalem, which is now his capital. We're skipping part of chapter 5, the end of chapter 5. You can read that on your own. And that's a pretty self-explanatory passage. But we're looking here at chapter 6. And so if you want to join along, now would be the time to go ahead and pause your audio and read the text, read all of chapter 6, and then unpause your audio, and we will dive into our Bible study. Here we are. We are in 2 Samuel chapter 6, and this is just a fascinating chapter. Now, back a few months ago, I gave a handout to people who were in a Bible study, and we were talking about an overview of the material in 2 Samuel, and we did a specific word study, is really what the handout was. It was a word study about a couple concepts of throne, glory, humility, and these ideas, and I talk at some length there about Michael and how Michael fits this pattern that we've seen through all of the Samuel material. Okay, all of the Samuel material has this sort of pattern where the humble are exalted and the proud are brought low. And Michael, who seemingly begins well, she risks her life to protect David. So, I mean, it's not like she was a bad wife the entire time. But what she does is that later here we see Michael despising David in her heart because of what happens. And we're going to get to that. But that's really where I want to focus today. So everybody's fairly familiar with the story, right? So David decides that he wants to bring the Ark of the Covenant back to Jerusalem. Okay. So the Ark really should be wherever the tabernacle is, but it appears that the tabernacle has been in some state of disrepair. It seems that it was at Nob, because that was the priestly city. And after Ahimelech was killed and Abiathar had to go on the run, or Abiathar, however you want to pronounce that. So the priestly village was slaughtered, and it seems like to some degree the tabernacle is in disrepair. And so what they do is they go and they want to bring the Ark of the Covenant up to the city of Jerusalem. And it appears that they want to bring the tabernacle up as well. It's this whole thing where they want Mount Zion, well, Mount Zion in the broader sense, but they want Jerusalem to be the place. They want it to not only be the political center, but they want it to be the religious center. And this is what David is doing. And so they begin to bring the Ark of the Covenant back. And when they reach verse 6, when they reach the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah reached out to grab hold of the Ark because the oxen stumbled. Now, they put it on a new cart. Now, the text is clear. The biblical text in the Old Testament is very clear that the Ark was to be carried on the shoulders of the priests. This was something that was well known. This wasn't, you know, hidden. This is how they were supposed to move it. They were not supposed to put it on a cart. Well, they put it on a cart. The oxen stumbled. It looked like it maybe was gonna tip over, and Uzzah reached out to steady the Ark of the Covenant. And the Lord was so furious with Uzzah, this is the NET translation, so furious with Uzzah, he killed him on the spot for his negligence. He died right there beside the Ark of the Lord. And this is one of those places where everybody knows the story, everybody is familiar with the story, and David was angry. David is angry at Yahweh because Yahweh attacks Uzzah. So the place is called Perez Uzzah, which means Perez means to break out. That's the meaning of that Hebrew verb. It means to break out. And so that place, the town used to be called, or the area used to be called Nacon, the threshing floor of Nacon, but now it's called Perez Uzzah. And so David was afraid of the Lord that day and said, "How will the Lord ever come to me?" So David was unwilling to bring the ark to Jerusalem. And this is actually something that is really fascinating in the text. Is David before was full of joy. He was full of joy and hope that the Lord would come and dwell near to them, that the Lord would come and dwell in Jerusalem. Now, David wasn't a pagan. David knew that just because the ark was there did not mean that the God like only lived in the ark or something. God knows that David is God everywhere. Okay. That's not what this is. But having the ark there, having the means of making atonement for sin, having the means of meeting with God through offering the prayers via incense, having the temple, the cult, I don't mean that in a bad way, having the cult there in Jerusalem was a great boon because it meant that God would be there. The meeting place of God would be in Jerusalem. So David would be able to meet with his people as the king. He would be able to meet with God as the king because the priests would be there mediating between God and man in the city of Jerusalem. So this is significant. David was excited about this. David thought that this was a great idea, but David was afraid. David was afraid. And verse 10 says he was no longer willing to bring the ark of the Lord to be with him in the city of David. David left it in the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite. Okay, so this is fascinating. And there's a lot of theological significance to this. And you notice that we're not doing the five W's today because we just don't have time. And like I said, I think it's a good practice to get into the habit of trying to identify these things without like actively going through them, without actively writing down who, when, where, what and why, to not actively do that, but to do that in the back of our minds, to already be doing that automatically. That's the significant thing. So David was not willing to do it. And David is not willing to do it that because he's afraid that God is going to strike them. And this is something that's a very plain and simple theological truth, is that the closer the Lord dwells with you, the more stringent his requirements are. The God, when God has a very low standard for godless nations. When we look in the Old Testament, God's standard for godless nations of judgment was extremely low. I mean, his standard for Nineveh was just stop invading other countries. That's a much lower standard than God's standard for Israel, for the nation that God has chosen. The point here, and this is a significant point, is that it is a great blessing for God to be near to you. But when God is near to you, when God is giving you those blessings, the requirements that God has for you and of you are significantly higher. There is a leveling up, if you will, of the requirements of God. And so to draw near to God means, you know, to be leaning on the everlasting arms, but it means you're also in spanking distance. You know, that's to use a very bad anthropomorphism. You know, that's the reality. The standards of those who want to draw near to the Lord are much higher than those who try to keep God at arm's length. And you say, that's not fair. Well, if you view it as simply punishment, then maybe it's not fair. But if you view it as discipline, then you see that it's actually in our best interest. It's in our best interest as Christians that God does not let us stray. He doesn't let us wander. He doesn't let us just wallow in our sin for extended periods of time. David was right to fear the Lord. David understood the lesson that the closer the Lord is to you, the more stringent his justice is, the more harsh and the more exacting his discipline is. And so David says, well, I mean, this is an interesting side of David, where David says, you know, I want God's blessings, but if this is just going to mean more stringent judgment, then I'm not willing to do this. And we say, well, maybe David was a bit of a hypocrite then. Maybe David only wanted God for the goodies. Well, maybe, but at least David has the wisdom to not pretend. You know, David had the wisdom to not pretend. David recognized that if I draw close to the Lord, if I bring the Ark of the Covenant there, I will have great blessings, but I will also be held to a significantly higher standard. And I'm not sure that I'm ready to be held to that standard. I'm not sure that I'm ready for my people to be held to that standard. So David, I mean, at least David is honest about it. At least David isn't pretending that God is not holding people to a higher standard. He's not pretending to be, you know, some nice Sunday school boy who just submits to the will of God when maybe he doesn't. Unfortunately, we have a lot of people like that. We have a lot of people who don't want to draw near to the Lord because they don't want the Lord's discipline, but they continue to go to church. They continue to call themselves Christians. They continue to do their devotions, but they do them with an empty heart. I mean, at least David has the honesty. I'm not saying David did right here, but I'm saying he did less wrong than he could have. He could have been a hypocrite and brought the ark there and just pissed and moaned every time something went badly that he didn't want to happen because the Lord was drawing close and was holding them to a higher standard of discipline. Anyways, so David was no longer willing to do this. And so the ark goes to Obed-Edom the Gittite. Now, Obed-Edom, it's interesting. Obed means the servant or the slave. Edom is, of course, it means red, or it could be the nation of Edom. And Gittite is a person from Gath. Okay, so they put it in the house of a foreigner. Remember, when it was in Gath, what happened when it was in Philistine territory? You know, things did not go so well for the Philistines. Well, here it goes to the house of Obed-Edom. And the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and all of his family. And David was told the Lord has blessed the family of Obed-Edom and everything he owns because of the Ark of God. So David went and joyfully brought the Ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David. And they carry it back. And when they took the Ark 6 steps, David sacrificed an ox and a fat calf. And David was wearing a linen ephod and dancing with all his strength before the Lord. And David and all Israel were bringing up the Ark of the Lord, shouting and blowing trumpets. Okay, so David realizes, okay, maybe I was too hasty. Maybe I shouldn't just dismiss bringing the Ark of the Lord. Maybe accepting the discipline of the Lord is worthy, is a good trade-off for receiving the blessing of the Lord. And so they go to bring the Ark of the Covenant back. And as the Ark enters the city of David, now remember, David is just wearing a linen ephod and he's dancing with all his might. And he entered the city of David. And Saul's daughter Michal looked out the window. When she saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, she despised him. She despised him. And they brought the Ark of the Lord and they put it in the place in the middle of the tent that David had pitched for it. And then David offered burnt sacrifices and peace offerings before the Lord. When David had finished offering the burnt sacrifices and the peace offerings, he pronounced a blessing over the people in the name of Yahweh, the Lord of hosts, the Lord of the armies. And he handed out to each member of the assembly, men and women, a portion of bread, a date cake, and a raisin cake. Then all the people went home. And when David goes home, so David goes, he does this, he has this great festival, he hands out, you know, bread and little pressed cakes, and all the people go home, and David goes back, and he goes to bless his own household, and Michal, Saul's daughter, comes out to meet him, and she says, "How the king of Israel has distinguished himself this day. He has exposed himself today before his servants, slave girls, the way any vulgar fool might do." And I like the way the Net Bible translates this, by the way. I think that really gets to the heart of it. And David replied to Michal, "It was before the Lord. I was celebrating before the Lord, who chose me over your father and his entire family and appointed me as leader over the Lord's people, Israel. I am willing to shame and humiliate myself even more than this. But with the slave girls whom you mentioned, let me be distinguished." Now, Michal, Saul's daughter, had no children until the day of her death. Okay. So this is where the story becomes really significant. This is where we really get to see the heart of Michal. Now, I believe that Michal, like I said, Michal seemed to be a pretty good wife to David in the early offing. But later we see here, later we see that after David has to flee for his life, she marries somebody. Maybe she was forced into that marriage. She doesn't seem to be really sad when she has to go back to David. You know, it's very interesting that when she's brought by Ish-bosheth, who would be her brother, by the way, Ish-bosheth, her brother, and Abner, her uncle, when she's taken away from her husband and saying, "Yeah, you're going back to David," it's her husband that's crying. It's not Michal that's crying. And frankly, I think that's a subtle hint. Michal loves power. Michal loves power. I think that when she fell in love with David, she had this schoolgirl crush on David. She realized that with David, she would be as close to the center of power as she possibly could be. She could see that David was well respected. He was a man of power. He was handsome. He was talented. He was brilliant. He was everything. I mean, he would, if we had like Tiger Beat in the Bible days, or 17 magazine, David would have been on the cover of Tiger Beat and 17 magazine because he was the heartthrob of the nation, you know. And she falls in love with him. But as she sees David's character more and more David's character is revealed to be a character that wants to serve the Lord and not serve himself. I mean, he makes some big mistakes, but in his heart of hearts, he wants to serve the Lord because the Lord had done a work in him. The Lord had transformed him. Michal, on the other hand, seems to be somebody who's loyal. But as the story progresses, we see more and more that she really only wanted power. She had this schoolgirl crush on David. She was in love with David, but she was in love with David in large part because she thought that being married to David would allow her to continue to secure a place of power. We see that Michal, when David goes and dances wearing this linen ephod, when he's doing this, he's acting in a non-kingly way. And Michal is angry about this. And what does she say? She says, you know, how the king of Israel has distinguished himself this day, you know, like, and she says, you know, you've exposed yourself before your servants, slave girls, the way any vulgar fool would do. Your slaves, slaves. You've exposed yourself to your slaves, slaves. And look at David's response to Michal, because I think David understands her heart here. And they were married, so David understood her about as well as anybody did. And he said, you know, I did this in honor of Yahweh. And the same Yahweh, by the way, who chose me rather than your father or any of your brothers and appointed me leader over Yahweh's people, Israel. Now, just take a pause right there. And so Michal is saying, my dad never acted like this when he was king. I think that's what's being said between the lines. My dad never acted like this. You're not acting like a king is supposed to act. And David says, I was celebrating in honor of Yahweh. Yahweh, by the way, who made me king instead of anybody in your family. Like, you tell me you know how kingly behavior is. Well, this is, I'm celebrating in honor of the God who put me in the position of king over anybody in your family. So I don't know that your family really knew very well what it meant to serve the Lord. And then he says, I'm willing to shame and humiliate myself even more than this. He's like, you think that this is the limit of what I will do? The means by which I will dishonor myself to honor the Lord? He says, yeah, you know, I'll become even more undignified than this, is I think how the NIV translates it. You know, he's saying, if you think this is undignifying, you think this is humiliating to me in honor of the Lord, you ain't seen nothing yet, girly. You would be amazed at what I could do to dishonor myself in means of honoring the Lord. And he says, you know, I will humiliate myself. I will humiliate myself. And I think that it's really interesting when we look at the Hebrew here, because verse 22 makes a lot more sense in Hebrew than it does in English. The English gives us the heart of what's saying, but when we look at the literal translation of what's being said, I think it gives us a little more insight into David's exact verbal meaning here. He says, I will be lowly in my own eyes. He's saying, I will be humiliated in my own eyes. He's saying, I will humiliate myself to such a degree that even I will think I've been humiliated. But the slave girls that you mentioned, they will honor me. He's saying, I will, to honor God, I will degrade myself to such an extent that I will be degraded in my own sight. Even I will think I'm going too far, but that will not stop the slave girls from honoring me. These slave girls, they will see me humiliating myself in my own eyes and in the eyes of God, but they will hold me in even greater honor. And then we have the kicker, verse 23. Verse 23 tells us, I think, all we need to know about Michal. Okay, so if we look at Samuel, how does the book of Samuel start? Well, it begins with a good woman who can't have children. And she goes to the temple, the tabernacle, but it's called the temple. She goes to the tabernacle and she prays that she might have children. And God answers her prayer. And that's how Samuel is born. Hannah begins the story. A barren woman prays for a child. A humble, humiliated, despised, barren woman has a child. And then and is because of her faithfulness to God, and she is lifted up. However, we look at Michal, this exalted, honored woman, despises the Lord, and she is humiliated and humbled, and she becomes barren. That is a significant thing. Don't miss that. In the Samuel material, when it says that someone is childless, this is meant to be a severe judgment of God. Hannah is godly and barren, but because of her godliness, because of her faith, God opens her womb. The humble barren woman honors God, and she is exalted and given children. The inverse of that is Michal, who is the exalted but proud woman who dishonors the Lord. And then she is humbled and she is barren. We see a role reversal of Michal and Hannah. We see a role reversal of Absalom. Later, we'll see the role reversal of Absalom and Hannah. This is significant. This tells us what we need to know about Michael. Michael was a proud woman. She was proud, and she didn't fear the Lord, at least not to the degree that she should have. She believed in power and gaining power and in honoring herself. David, for all of his faults, David believed in humbling himself in honor of the Lord. That's the significant difference between these two people. That's the significant difference that's worth taking away. Michael, this who had this schoolgirl crush on David, Michael, who was in love with David, but really she was in love with power. She was in love with control. She was in love with her own dignity and her own exaltation. She is this picture of the woman who was brought down. She's the picture of Peninnah. You have two archetypes in the story. You have a lot of archetypes, really, but you've got Hannah and Peninnah. You know, you've got the Hannah and Peninnah. Peninnah is we don't know. The Jewish legend says that she was humiliated and that, you know, for every child Hannah had, Peninnah lost several. You know, and the Peninnah ended up childless and Hannah had all of these children. And that's just Jewish legend. I don't think we can put a whole lot of stock into that. But what we see is from the very beginning, we see the comparison between the proud and the humble. Those are the two archetypes that are set at the very beginning of the story. The proud and the humble. And we see the proud and the humble carry out and carry on throughout the entire books of 1 and 2 Samuel. It's the most important key to understanding these books. I would really recommend if you have the time and if you've never done it before, read through 1 and 2 Samuel. Read through them as one contiguous piece of work, one single book, and read through them with the recognition that there are two major archetypes, the archetype of Hannah and the archetype of Peninnah, and how which really are the archetype of the humble who is exalted and the proud who is brought low. And we see that with Eli. We see that with Saul. We see that with Michael. We see that with Absalom. We see that with Ahithophel. In fact, we'll see that later. We see over and over and over, we see the proud are humbled. And we see the humble are lifted up. And those are the keys. Those are the keys to understanding 1 and 2 Samuel. Anyways, I hope you really enjoyed this Bible study. I really enjoyed teaching it because this is honestly, the story of Michael and David, I think, is one of the most fascinating stories in the Bible. I think the comparison between these two, I think their dynamic is really fascinating. I love the material in 1 and 2 Samuel. If I ever wrote a commentary, it would be on 1 and 2 Samuel. Well, or Philemon or John or... or Genesis, or I guess I could write a lot of them. But I really love this material. I'm so excited that we get to go through it, and I'm so excited for you to join us tomorrow. So I hope to talk to you tomorrow for another exciting morning Bible study. Thank you. God bless, and bye.